The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
So let's go into where your name came from.
All right, so
you weren't born that. It doesn't say that on your birth certificate, right?
Not yet. No, I'm just playing. So my name is actually Aimé Mukendi Jr.
Okay.
Yes, and Aimé,
is that your dad's name?
Yep. Okay. And Aimé means love, and sir comes from, so my dad and I, we have this thing where the highest level of respect for someone who identifies as a male is sir. So if a three-year-old boy holds the door open for me walking into a store, I say, thank you, sir. It's like, it's automatic. That, can you pass the salt? Here you go. Thank you, sir. It's automatic. So
yeah.
Sir was just, it's just a part
respect.
Of the respect and the culture and then just the mentality. And then when I was in high school, one of my, a good friend in high school, he said to me one day, he's like, you should go by Amazing.
Like, yeah, that's why you spell it that way though.
Like it really fits. And yeah. And then, so with my name already being Aimé, and then he said it and I said, okay, I'll try it. And when I was in high school, I did a blog that ended up being in the Buffalo newspaper. A few Amazing Words blog posts. Like I wrote a blog that made it to the news. I did a school newspaper, which was like a commentary, poetry, news type of thing. A few Amazing Words. When I was in college, I interviewed Woj. I don't know if you're an NBA fan or not.
A little bit, but, yeah.
2014.
More so than baseball. Baseball's boring.
Summer of 2014, when LeBron went back, though, I interviewed Woj on my podcast and made it to sportsillustrated.com, a few Amazing Words. Nice. So it always just stuck. And I think a part of it now is like what Amazing really represents is how amazing every single person is.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
What's going on, world? My name is Sir Amazing. I am an individual that helps people reduce pain, become more effective, and have a better self-image. If you want to learn more about me, all you have to do is text Motivator to 21,000. Shipped up.
All right. So, Sir Amazing. Do I call you Sir or just Amazing?
Whichever one makes you feel better.
You're good. You're flexible. Okay. So, let's talk about, you know, tell me about where you're from, where you grew up. I don't even know what part of the country you're in. I think it's Atlanta, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, good. I have somewhat of a memory. I'm losing it sometimes, but, and then we'll get into what you're doing now, but let's go back a little bit.
So I was originally from Buffalo, New York. That's where I was born and raised. Just moved to Atlanta summer 2020. And
perfect timing.
It's pretty good timing, right? So yeah. Ask me specific questions and I feel like I could give better answers.
Yeah. Well, so how did you end up in Buffalo, first of all?
Well,
it's like beautiful Buffalo, you know, let's go to Buffalo. I met a guy from South Africa. He's in Buffalo. I go, how in the world did you end up in Buffalo? Well, he met this girl and she's from Buffalo. Well, that made sense. So how'd you end up in Buffalo?
The creator, he's made these two humans, one named Aimee, the other one named Monique, those being my parents. Okay. They met, they had me, and that's where I was born. So,
and they were in Buffalo, I guess, right?
Hey, yes, sir.
You don't know how they got to Buffalo?
So my dad is originally from Democratic Republic of Congo.
Okay.
So
right near Buffalo. Over to this,
right. It's so right. Close, right?
Yeah. Closer to South Africa, what I just told you.
Exactly. Yeah. Literally. Right. So he came over to the States, I want to say the early 90s. My mom is originally from Niagara Falls, New York.
Oh, that's right there. Sure.
Yeah, so that's right there. So, you know, who knows what happened back in 93 or 92, whenever it was. I was born in 93, so it was 92, I guess.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. That was the year I graduated law school, so you make me feel old. Wow.
Yeah. It's all mental.
But you just moved to Atlanta. So what were you doing in Buffalo for the last 20 some odd years?
Breathing.
20 years, 30 years, just breathing. That's good. Breathing's always good. You know, people say, what's the matter? Good. I'm trying to breathe.
You got to get the air. So there's a lot, honestly.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back. I want to hear the whole story.
Buffalo, New York is where I was born and bred. I did a lot of community work there. Went to school not too far from Buffalo at St. Bonaventure University.
Okay, sure.
I'm still a part of a lot of different organizations. So I'm a part of the Buffalo Association of Black Journalists because my bachelor's degree is in journalism and mass communication.
Great.
I am a member of the NAACP chapter out there. So my last event in Buffalo before moving to Atlanta was we held an event where we gave out masks, but we also had the census on site. So people get their census information filled out and everything. Right. And it was a voter registration because in New York State, the primaries, I believe, were June 23rd. So we had an event June 5th, and I also did a book signing at that event. So I do some things with the NAACP. I'm a part of the Buffalo Urban League Young Professionals, which because of COVID, I really wasn't able to be as active as I would have liked to have been this year. Because there's a few events that we were organizing. I'm part of a few different networking groups within the city. And then also, like I said, I did a lot of community work. So the big community center for me that got me started in the volunteer world is Johnny B. Wiley Sports Pavilion, which is pretty historic. Okay. That's where the Buffalo Bills used to play back in, like, I don't know, the 60s, way before I was born.
Okay.
But that's really the first major volunteering event I did was 2 years ago was it was Veterans Day breakfast or Veterans Day dinner, but yeah, for Thanksgiving. So from there, we did the Veterans Day event. We did a holiday event around Christmas time. We did a New Year's Day breakfast where we were able to feed 300 people in the community totally free to start off 2019. We did, which is an event I organized, was honoring Dr. King from a youth perspective, where we had 5 to 7 different youth organizations. Some did poems, some did a dance, some did a song, all different ways of honoring Dr. King. And then we wrapped it with a pillar in the city, Brother Clifford Bell, who is 90 years old. I think he's born in 1929 as well. But he was the person who organized this great statue that was built for Dr. King back in the 80s, raising over $250,000 to do that. So he was the keynote speaker of that event. We also did some other events, though. So I've done a lot of emceeing, hosting events, a lot of social community action, work, basically. And a lot of work with youth.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So you had so much going on in Buffalo. What made you come down to Atlanta?
Well,
not coronavirus. It's worse down there. Yeah.
The irony of it is that it was kind of always predestined for me to be here.
Okay.
When I finished undergrad 5 years ago, my dad said to me that he wanted me to come down here, stay with him for a couple years, and then buy a house down here. And at the time, I was like, I don't really want to own a home, Dad. Like, I don't really, home ownership is great. It's an asset building. But at the time, I was just thinking, like, there's a lot of upkeep that I know comes with the home. Something breaks down, you either got to pay for it or you got to fix it.
You know, it's funny. All the guys of your generation, it's not like the American dream. You should own a home. It's not like that. People more millennials and even younger than you, they're like, yeah, what do we need a home for? It's just different. It's a different mindset, you know?
You know, now it's like I'm focused in. I definitely have that on my list of goals, just because of asset building and understanding the different financial freedom that can come from owning a home. But at age 22, when I was thinking about, I grew up in a single parent home. So stuff broke down in the house all the time with my mom. Like, I remember things, you know what I mean? It's kind of like you got to make things work. And even in past relationships where I've been there in the wintertime when the heat cut off and the electricity went out, like, okay, what are we going to do? Christmas is in 2 weeks. And, you know, everybody's fun.
Wintertime's cold
around that time. You know what I mean? So,
so your dad's in Atlanta. That's what brought you down there.
Yes, sir.
Got it. Okay. All right. So, you're going to get as involved in the community in Atlanta that you were in Buffalo, you think?
I mean, that's the plan.
Yeah. It's a little hard right now, right?
Corona has its pros and cons. You know, when I think about some aspects, I'm a mover and shaker, and I would love to have been able to maximize the networking opportunities down here through the last, it's October. I've moved back in June. So the last four and a half months I've been here. But at the same time, because of Corona, I'm able to do this podcast with you.
Yeah, we met. Right. Exactly. I'm up in Jersey. We wouldn't have met. I met people all over the country. Yeah. So, and you also, I guess, have a job. You got to work, right? So you're working down in Atlanta?
So I don't really have a job. I really work for myself.
You wrote a book, you said, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir. So I have the book, and right now I'm in school as well. So I decided to go back for my master's. I'm in my second year for a degree in creativity, change, and leadership. But I'm also, right now, I'm putting together a big time document. I don't want to say big time, but a documentary on healthy masculinity.
Okay.
So that's really where my focus has been.
Is that for the Black community, or is it more of a general?
It is. So the project started. This is an interesting story. So 2 years ago.
Okay.
You wanted to hear background. So two years ago.
I want to hear it all.
I was 25 years old. I got a job as a supervisor for one of the top manufacturers in the world. Excuse me. So I'm making, in Buffalo, New York, at age 25, making 50 plus K.
Okay.
It's a solid little 25. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's a solid start.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting fired in September of 2018.
Okay.
And it was one of the lowest lows of my life. And I just remember going through that experience, and I'll never forget, my car broke down on Main Street. At the time I was the woman I was dating. We weren't together. We were like kind of on the outs. My car breaks down. The axle breaks right in the middle of Main Street. Cop pulls over.
Right.
Tries to help me push it in. We can't move it at all. And I just remember feeling,
your axle breaks. You can't roll the car.
You can't do anything.
Right.
And I remember in that moment, it was the lowest I ever felt as a man.
That you just like gotten fired and you were like heading home and you're like, what else could go wrong today? Right.
This is like, it wasn't the same day, but it was like in the midst of it. So me getting fired in September, this happened like maybe the end of the month, first week of October.
Okay.
Right. Where I'm kind of figuring out, and the irony of masculinity and how it plays into it was the reason why me and my partner at the time, the reason why we weren't together is because I didn't tell her. For about 2 or 3 weeks, I was so embarrassed.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh.
Like, was it something you did, or was the company just cutting back, or was there no reason?
It was a situation where I was a title head. There wasn't really action that I could take. So technically somebody who I was supervising had more leverage. They had more security than me.
They got your union fired.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So like union situation was, it's easier to cut me off than it is to cut one of the workers off.
Because
they're in a union. So that's how the situation went.
Right.
But so that was to go back to that day, and just thinking, like, I remember trying to get in, she had me blocked. I remember I'm going in AutoZone. Like, I just use the phone. I'm calling, like, please just, like, send Geico to me real quick. She's not even picking up the phone. And I just remember being, this is the lowest I felt as a man, because one thing I've learned in my experience is that, especially when it comes to men, and even more especially when it comes to Black men in the United States of America, it's not about who we are. It's what we can offer. So at that time, I felt like I couldn't offer.
Yeah,
I felt like I couldn't really offer much. If I'm not making money, then how can I help anybody? And I go through that day and go through the experience of trying to figure out what I'm going to do. And I made a decision. I said, if I'm going to work for anyone, I have to have direct contact with youth. Like, I want to have direct contact with youth. Want to make an impact. Want to make an impact. And just in the midst of networking and going and just thinking back, like, I'm coming to these events in a blazer and, you know, hi, my name is Amy, aka Sir Amazing. And it looks like I got everything all together. And I'm broke, really, at that time.
Well, you don't have to tell anybody that.
You don't, but it's
fake
like
it till you make it.
Right. It's so ironic because in some cases they say fake it till you make it. Some cases people say be honest. But in the midst of that, I met someone who I ended up getting an interview to do a per diem job. And this per diem job was a partnership with Cornell University that was going to allow me.
I am a Cornell graduate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
OK, so you truly really appreciate this. So it's based on a research project that was really trying to prevent domestic violence, rape, a lot of things within the inner city, especially.
Okay.
So this program was going to allow me to survey 12 to 14 year old young men in the inner city, which mostly were kids that looked like me, on healthy masculinity. And
was this like a graduate research project? Is that what it was? Somebody in the graduate school or something like that?
Something like that.
But it was a research project. They were researching to publish the data or whatever. Okay.
Exactly. So from that program, it ended up turning into a full-time gig, I want to say in March. But it was aligned with the mission. And it's so ironic because it was per diem. So if school's out, means there's no work. No work for me, right? And going through that process of just learning and reading more and really starting to work on myself to see how I could be a better service, while at the same time still being able to cultivate relationships and have that interaction with students. In retrospect, it is pretty amazing. Because
I'm going to ask you how you came up with your name, but we'll get to that later.
We're going to get to that one. So from there, we basically did that project. So we did that project for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And in May of 2019, I pitched the idea. I'm like, what if I did a documentary or a mini docuseries on this project? Just kind of like having the facilitators.
Right.
I forgot to mention that part. And site coordinators. So there was the survey portion, but then there was also schools where there were facilitators would go to them. And they would have 10 sessions with these young men. And really, it's just creating a safe space, going over masculinity, just creating an opportunity for boys to speak their minds.
Group therapy sessions or individuals? No, groups.
Groups. Yeah. So it'd be about, you figure, anywhere from 5 to 15 boys in one group.
Right.
Right. So, but just having that space, which is so essential. And I pitched this idea in May of 2019, like, yeah, what if I did a docuseries retelling the story from the facilitator's perspective? And it gets approved. And I remember October of last year, I think I got the note word that it was approved, but it wasn't a lot of action. Fast forward, because it was a 2-year project too. So it was scheduled to be completed in June of 2020. Okay. Fast forward and school gets,
Everything COVID got derailed. Happens. Yeah, Cornell closed too. Yeah, right.
Everything happens, right? And so we're not able to finish the survey portion. And then situations like Ahmaud Arbery, George Floyd,
right?
Breonna Taylor's not a man, but these situations happen in the midst of it. So when I have a conversation with the research team in the summer, I say, you know what? I have a new idea based off everything that's happened. So the idea was, instead of just simply talking from the facilitator's aspect, what if I tie this to, because one of the biggest things that stood out to me within the midst of all of this was George Floyd being on the ground, knee to his neck, and he's screaming out for his mother. 50-year-old man screaming for his mother. And all that kept coming to me is, how does that tie to masculinity? So I pitched a new idea and I say, what if I did a documentary that highlights and really creates a commentary on healthy masculinity for an African-American man?
Okay.
And they believed in the vision, because this is partnership with Cornell.
Because the survey wasn't just for Black men. It wasn't, right? Right. It was general research. Right.
In the inner city. So by the numbers, it's more of us in the
because
inner city.
Because of the
inner, right. We're taking this,
right. Because the demographics.
Boom, right?
Yeah.
So, but because of that, that kind of tied and everything. And then just me being who I am and me have been a facilitator and me going through different experiences and not even those moments of being out of work and feeling like, man, there's no safety net for me.
Right.
There's no space where I can comfortably say, I don't, when that happened, I didn't even tell my dad that I got fired. I didn't even tell him that I was out of work. No, I was too pride, shame, just there's, and this is one of the biggest things that has inspired. There's not a lot of vulnerability. Excuse me. There's not a lot of space to be vulnerable.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Any men, we're like taught to, certainly in the inner cities, it's even harder, right? Because you got to be tough and you got to be this and you got to be that. And sometimes you don't, you know, you didn't grow up with your dad, so you don't have a father figure, stuff like that. And it's not just Black or white or Hispanic, but it's definitely low income, right? More troubled situations. And I think we're like the certain expectations that are put on us. You know, I'm 53, so it's different. But when I was 25, I felt the same way. I mean, I was, you know, there's a lot of depression amongst young men, and you don't even know what depression is. You just think like you feel bad about yourself and you're supposed to be doing certain things, but that's not really true. You just think that you're supposed to be doing certain things. Like if you told your dad you were embarrassed, your dad would be like, I've been through that. I got 50 friends that have been through that, you know, because that's what life happens. But you don't know that when you're a teenager or in high school or you're 25, you really don't know. And I mean, shit, I probably didn't know when I was 40. Because you don't, it takes a long experience to go through stuff and then realize that other people went through stuff, and doesn't have to be like, you don't have to be so tough. That doesn't make you, you know, masculine. So, I mean, it's a lot to be said that you recognize that.
I mean, literally, like we're all going through it. And with, I think within the light of everything that had occurred in 2020,
yeah,
I was like, this is the perfect opportunity. So now it's shifted to three different parts. And the first part is the facilitators and the site coordinator talking about the pros and the cons of the program. The second is I interview some different influencers within the health. It's three different people. One is a health enthusiast, fitness coach.
Okay.
One is a relationship healing coach. The other one, he runs big page has been growing, the Black Millionaires page. So talking about those different aspects, but the healing and relationships, the fitness portion of masculinity, and then the financial
right, success,
portion as well.
Yeah.
And then the third episode is, it's really commentary on George Floyd and how this program can help be part of that solution to reduce those type of situations. So that's something that I'm really proud of. I'm really excited, and it's taking up a lot of energy and thoughts, but it really all started from being a part of that program 2 years ago, I really reflecting on it now with you. I don't know if I've ever done it in this aspect, but to just think what led to those moments and where I was as a man heading into not even realizing, not even knowing that, oh my gosh, in 2 years, you know, I'm going to be in a new city and I'm going to be right. able to still work on this project. I'm going to be in school. I had no intention of ever going back to school when I finished undergrad. So all of those different parts, I don't know. I think that's why I guess some people say the name Amazing Fits.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a lot to be said about, you know, it's funny because 2 years ago, they might not have approved the project, but now the world's boiling over and, you know, everybody's on fire and it's a different perspective. So whatever, timing's everything, right? I mean, it's you want to make a difference in the world and you hope your message gets through. And sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I mean, it wasn't getting through So people just went apeshit. I mean, they just went nuts. The things that have been going on in this country is just terrible.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
It's just really very disappointing of the whole thing. And this whole thing with the election and the way people are voting. I mean, the Midwest is bad shit going on. Some serious racism, serious bigotry against all kinds of groups. You know, I mean, I'm Jewish. People break into, you know, temples and shoot people because they're Jewish. And, you know, it's like the Holocaust again. I mean, it's all bad stuff. And we gotta make it go away and stand up for these people. That's like, it's funny because my wife's half Italian, right? So a lot of them voted for Trump. Now, half of them are very embarrassed about it. And then the other half are still like supporting this guy. And I'm like, it has nothing to do with the Republican or Democrat. It has to do with being a decent human being. He's a despicable person. There's nothing. I don't care what political party he's in. I don't care, you know, all that stuff. It's just he's a despicable human being. And it's not what this country should be about. I'm sure Ruth Bader Ginsburg's not too happy rolling over in her grave with this. I won't say it on the air, but this woman that's going to basically take her spot. She might as well be a white conservative man. I mean, with her beliefs, you know, it's just unbelievable, you know? So you'd think it's like we went backwards 30 or 40 years in race relations and things in the last year and a half, you know, it's frustrating. It's disappointing. It's just, and I feel like I can't do anything about it. What, you know, who am I? Some white Jewish kid from New Jersey. I don't know. It's crazy, but it's like almost the 60s. We got to get in our car. We got to go to the rallies again. You know, there was a Trump parade yesterday in my town. Like I live in New Jersey. It's a blue state, right? It's very Democratic, liberal. All these people are driving up in their trucks. I don't even know where these people came from. I don't know if they drove from another state or Pennsylvania. I don't know where they came from. They're all driving up in these pickup trucks and beeping and yelling. People are looking at them like, what are you even doing here? I don't know where these people came from. It's crazy. You empower them. You talk about empowerment. That's what happened. The president empowered these people, you know? And if you really like that, then you just don't care about other people. That's basically what it means. You just don't give a shit. And you're like, I don't care. I only care about myself. And I don't think that's great. You know, you're entitled to be selfish and we all want to protect our own. But at the end of the day, we all got to walk the same streets and deal with the same shit, you know? And, you know, just because they can't tell I'm Jewish because it's not like my skin's blue, you know, and you could be singled out. It's not fair, you know, but I love what you're doing. I mean, I like the whole, I mean, you turn yourself around. So you want to help other people turn themselves around, you know, nobody else going to do it. That's a lot of problems in the inner cities, in the poorer neighborhoods. People leave the neighborhoods, whatever ethnic background they are, whatever, and they become successful. They don't always go back and help, you know, like I got out. Why can't they get out? That's not a good attitude. There's a lot of people that are struggling in situations that they did not create. And they're not empowered enough to like go and learn off the internet or educate themselves. Or that takes a lot to do that, you know. Not everybody does it. People just wander through life. They don't know what to do. So look at New York. I don't know if you've been watching, you haven't been up here, but It's like a ghost town. People aren't, you know, nobody's in the streets, and yeah, it's craziness. So it's unbelievable. You like being in Atlanta though so far? I mean,
I love it.
Oh, good.
I love it. It's I mean, man, you hit on so many things. So like in the midst of all of this, I recently read the last book that Dr. King published before he was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
Where Do We Go From Here? Community or Chaos? And it's so prophetic. I mean, everything that you just touched on, he basically stated was going to happen. Literally.
Yeah.
I mean, he broke down everything. He broke down how the black man is viewed in a certain way that roots back from slavery that has never really been fixed from a family structure perspective. He talked about how he understood why people were so supportive of black power, but he also stated how the use of the word power was going to even make more fearful people. So it really
create more problems.
Though the thinking behind it was, okay, yeah, liberation, but it wasn't really liberation. It was going to create more of a divide. He talked about how in 68, it's like, okay, so you hire one black person. That's not, the job's not done. It's not over. You don't get a pat in the back.
It wasn't like we all got together and said, let's build a community together.
Exactly.
It was like, oh, you're forcing me to let you in. That was basically the attitude. Look at segregation. Segregation was totally a failure because they didn't desegregate the teachers, right? So then the kids are going to the white communities. And what are the teachers? They don't want anything to do with the kids. They didn't help. Total failure.
Something that you mentioned, too, is how he kind of wrapped everything up was using the analogy of, he said, think about it. When you get up in the morning, where's your coffee from? Where are your clothes, the fabrics of your clothing from? Where's your couch from? Who made your car? You're in contact with the world before you go to work, but you have this idea that you've accepted that you're just so separate. But
xenophobia, we're all afraid. Yeah.
And yeah, it was like I said, it was, I mean, the opportunity of reading that and how it just played within the timing and then being down here in Atlanta, like people ask me, how's Atlanta? I tell them where I'm from. I can't go in Buffalo, New York. I can't go to a professional location and see a large amount of people that look like me.
In Buffalo or in Atlanta?
In Buffalo.
It's a small black community, right?
It's more like the movers and shakers. If I go to location A, I'm going to see three people I know. And those, I might see those same three people at location B, location C, location D.
It's the same.
So it's like, you know what I mean? It's being recycled. Whereas in Atlanta, I can go to multiple places and I'm going to see new people every day. And I'm not saying that from an aspect of segregation. I'm saying it from an aspect of
just a bigger black community, right?
It's necessary.
Yeah.
I was in a barbershop. This is so ironic. I was in a barbershop maybe 3 weeks ago. And I got a 10-year-old little brother. He was with me that day. And it's five black men in there. One of them is an avid Trump supporter.
Which blows my mind. But I know there's a lot of black people that support Trump. It blows my mind. It's like saying you're still in favor of slavery and you're black.
Sitting here and I'm mentioning Obama. He's down in him. I'm mentioning Michael Jordan down in him. Will Smith down in him. And I'm just like, wait a second. I'm not saying everything Obama did was right, but I know how important it was for my 10-year-old little brother to have seen President Obama.
Talk about leadership.
To know that it's a reality.
Possible,
to know that it's possible. And I think for me, that's one of my biggest excitements about Atlanta is being able to see that and getting that encouragement and meeting new people that are more like-minded. Because like you said, there are so many of us on this planet that are drifting. Wandering, you know, that's
one of my loss.
Yeah. And some of my biggest motivations, that's part of the reason why I went to school. That's part of the reason why the title of my book is Everyone Needs a Hero. Why Can't It Be You? We're all here for a reason. We all have a purpose. And each and every one of us plays a role in history of our world. So why wouldn't you? And to me, I can't fathom.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you want to maximize your role with honor? It's a lot.
It's like Jewish people that deny the Holocaust happened. I mean, it's like ridiculous. You can't even have conversations with people like that, though. You can't have a conversation with a friend who's black and supports Trump. It's just a wasted conversation because it's obviously too stupid. I mean, what could even be his motivation? Look, I understand Obama was very liberal and there's people that loved him and hated him. And he probably went 10 years ahead in race relations and went 30 years backwards under Trump. But what is he like about, do you like the fact that he's a criminal, that he brings in people that get in trouble all the time, that he's an idiot? He says stupid things all the time.
He brought up an example of, I guess, as far as a bill with that directed his wife and their son of like he had to pay more under the Obama administration than he had to pay as far as health care for his son under Trump. But my, like you
said, that has nothing to do with Trump. Trump didn't do anything to the health care system.
My thing is, like, when it comes to this particular election, it's about humanity.
Right.
It's about humanity. I can say this. I'm 27. I'll be 30 in a few years. I know for a fact that a 70 plus year old white guy cannot represent me properly. Like, that's the, like, the,
it's not, it's even possible.
It's probably at the bottom of the totem pole. Like, there's so many other different types of human beings that could properly represent.
That's for sure.
Right? But at the end of the day, as a human, right. Like, if you're asking who I am, I'm a human before anything. Right. What did I do in Buffalo? I breathed air, thankfully.
Yeah.
Enough air to allow me to be here now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, right. Humanity. And I think a lot of us have the idea where we don't look at us as us. You're different from me, so you're an it. But when you have that level of thinking of looking at somebody as an it, it's really speaking volumes about what you really think of them. Because that's why you can be unaffected when you see George Floyd and you might say, well, blue lives matter. No one ever said that there aren't good cops out there. There are good cops
right.
out there.
That's not the point. I mean?
It's the point that why does this guy have the audacity, the carelessness in front of a group of people?
Right. It's irresponsible, isn't it?
To kneel 8 minutes and 46 seconds. And there's other officers right there.
Yeah.
Enabling.
And they didn't do anything.
That's a problem because he's a human being. That's right. Not an insect. There's people that will get conscious about a bug. Oh my gosh, don't kill it. Let the fly out. But this is a human.
Yeah.
This is a human being. And I think that's
it's unbelievable. But that's, you know, that's what divides this country. That's why it's so divisive right now. Is people don't give a shit about each other. And it's not good. It's like, what was the thing they were saying when Black Lives Matter came out? It was like, well, all lives matter. And a friend of mine said, not a really good friend of mine. I said, are you stupid? He's like, what? I go, do you even understand? Like, yeah, all lives matter, but you didn't deal with 200, 300 years of oppression. I mean, you know, so that it's funny because my wife gets into these Twitter wars and stuff or Facebook, whatever, even with relatives or us. I'm like, honey, don't talk to stupid people. Like, don't do it. You can't have a conversation with people that just, you know, they cried when Rush Limbaugh said that he had cancer. I mean, you can't have those conversations with people. If they were nice enough, they should like write on their forehead, I'm stupid. And then you would know, just stay away from conversations with people like that.
That's one of the biggest things where I remember I was doing some type of brand ambassador work and I was in a really, really Caucasian area. And a guy walks in there, big burly beard. He's probably about 6'4". I look him, he had a Trump hat on. I think he might've had a MAGA hat.
Yeah,
I looked him right in his eye and said, nice hat.
Yeah.
And it just, like, I could tell
the smoke coming out of his ears.
He was, like, he was cracking his neck and stuff because I wanted him to know, thank you for letting me know. Thank you for telling me, like you said, thank you for letting me know that you're an idiot. Thank you. I'd much rather you tell me than have certain conversations with me and you use specific verbiage that makes you think that I'm not aware of the subtle shots that you're taking or the subtle ways you're. Thank you for just me. I'm very comfortable with that. Like I appreciate people. If you want to throw the Confederate flag, you want to wear. Thank you. Thank you for letting me know that you don't have the capability of learning. I appreciate you.
Just gonna save you a lot of time. I have.
You know
hat.
What I mean?
Wait, I got a hat here. Hold on. You see what this says? Can you read that?
Ha!
That says make Donald Trump again. So you know John Oliver. On HBO, he's one of the liberal commentators, like Trevor Noah.
Yes,
so there was this thing that he did. Apparently, Donald Trump like ancestors a couple generations ago when they came to this country, their last name was Drumpf and they had changed it. So he had this hat made of my, and my friend who owns a hat factory in Newark, he does this kind of embroidery stuff. So he made these things for John Oliver. He gave me one and it says, make Donald Drumpf again, meaning change his last name back to the old name. And I had right? it. So, yeah.
He's so against immigrants, right? Ironically.
Exactly. We're all immigrants. unless you're American Indian, everyone else came from somewhere else.
Literally.
And, you know, I mean, you know, I understand black is not everyone came from Africa, but actually they probably did, right? Because anybody that ended up in like the colonial islands who were black came from Africa, right? Didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so. And I think that's another factor where, for me, I guess where Trump, some people may not have the same aspect because my reality is, okay, so I got a lot of family that are immigrants. This guy is, what he represents and what he's pushing is firmly against immigrants. I got family. My dad is an immigrant.
Yeah.
My stepmom, my aunts, yeah. uncle, cousins, they weren't all born here. I'm the only one. Well, me and then my two siblings, my dad's kids, and then any kids that my cousins have had, the only ones born here in the States from my family. You know what I mean? So I don't know.
You wouldn't have been able to get in now. You'd be separated, put in a cage. You don't see they still have 500 kids are trying to find their parents. I mean, come on.
Come on. That's families. Like, and I think, I don't know.
That's the thing. I'm hoping with this election, then we'll get back to your stuff, that it's just like a landslide. I don't know if it's going to be, and I'm really worried about what's going to be the outcome because they won't let us into Canada, so I can't leave. But, you know, but I mean, Joe Biden, look, you can agree with his politics or not. He's a good guy. He cares about his grandchildren. He cares about his children. He meets you at an event. He'll call you literally on your phone like 2 weeks later, see how you're doing. I mean, he's a good guy. Trump doesn't do that stuff. He doesn't call his own children. Come on. You know, so it's just a sad commentary where we are nowadays. But now you're young, so you got another 50, 60 years ahead of yourself to change the world. So Maybe. Hopefully you will.
Maybe.
Yeah. So let's go into where your name came from.
All right. So
you weren't born that. This doesn't say that on your birth certificate, right?
Not yet. No, I'm just playing. So my name is actually Aimee Mukendi Jr.
Okay.
Yes, and Aimee.
Is that your dad's name?
Yep. Okay. And Aimee means love, and sir comes from. So my dad and I, we have this thing where the highest level of respect for someone who identifies as a male is sir. So if a 3-year-old boy holds the door open for me walking into a store, I say thank you, sir. It's like it's automatic. That can you pass the salt? Here you go. Thank you, sir. It's automatic. So
yeah.
Sir was just it's just a part
respect.
Of the respect and the culture and then just the mentality. And then when I was in high school, one of my a good friend in high school, he said to me one day, he's like, you should go by Amazing.
Like, yeah, that's why you spelled it that way though.
Like it really fits. And yeah. And then, so with my name already being Aimee, and then he said it and I said, okay, I'll try it. And when I was in high school, I did a blog that ended up being in the Buffalo newspaper, a few Amazing Words blog posts. Like I wrote a blog that made it to the news. I did a school newspaper, which was like a commentary, poetry, news type of thing. A few Amazing Words. When I was in college, I interview Woj. I don't know if you're an NBA fan or not.
A little bit, but, yeah.
2014.
More so than baseball. Baseball's boring.
Well, summer of 2014, when LeBron went back, though, I interviewed Woj on my podcast and made it to sportsillustrated.com, a few Amazing Words. Nice. So it always just stuck. And I think a part of it now is like what Amazing really represents is how amazing every single person is. It's amazing because we're that one in a trillion sperm that connect with the egg through conception. Like that's amazing. It's amazing.
Or you wouldn't be here if that didn't make that connection. Right.
Exactly. Right. It's amazing that through this pandemic that people have been able to still start businesses and find a new part of their hero that they didn't even know existed prior to all of this.
Yeah, we are amazing. Best when things are at their worst for a lot of us. Hopefully for most of us. Unfortunately, I don't think that's the case, but yeah.
as many as can ride the train, right?
Exactly.
So that's really what amazing stands for, and I really just try to live up to that name.
Nice, because I thought you were like it could be like an entertainment, you know, like what was the poetry thing? Remember, there were people who would go on stage and do like poetry. I think Russell Simmons ran it or something. It wasn't the Def Comedy Jam. That was something else. It was on HBO. Different people would get up. It wasn't black. It was all mixed, different kind of people. And
they would get up and do poetry.
It was poetry. And they would like, it was like, it wasn't rap. It was like rapping a poem. There's no music. You know what I mean? It was like, you know, you're getting your thoughts out. Yeah. It was like freestyling poetry. I don't even think they wrote it down. I think they were just making it as talented people, you know, with a lot to say.
So I guess Sir Amazing, a part of it is that stage name, though. So.
But you haven't changed it by law.
No, not yet.
Not yet. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You'll do it, though. You'll do it. But is the book written by Sir Amazing?
So I'll show you right quick.
Okay.
So.
Oh, you're real. Oh yeah.
Yeah, but you know, Sir Amazing, that's like my right. SirAmazing.com is my website, Sir Amazing on Instagram, LinkedIn. I remember doing an interview maybe last summer.
Uh-huh.
And they were like, "So Sir Amazing is like your superhero name." And I was like,
"In 19, yeah. I mean, last summer before."
Yeah, 2019. Yeah. Right. I'm like,
"Yeah, it is."
Yeah. that's what it is. So, I like it.
So what's your message? Like, you know, what is not your real person, your persona, Sir Amazing. Like, what's his message, you know, in terms of getting out to the world?
I think they're intertwined. I think it's the same person. Okay. But the message is that there are 7.8 billion people on the planet, but there's only one you. One person with your vision. One person with your dream, one person with your soul, one person with your mind, and one person with your capabilities of achieving what you were put on this planet to achieve.
And we can all make a difference, huh? Like you shouldn't feel like you can't. It's always a way, especially nowadays, right? You can have a voice. You can be a thought leader. You can publish things online. You can do a podcast. You still have your podcast too?
So here's the thing. I'm like in transition right now. there's a few things come Q1 2021. We'll see what's on the map. But I'm in a transitional period right now with the podcast.
Taking a break, right?
I mean, before even getting on here, it's a lot of reading for school.
Yeah.
And then getting everything.
So how far are you along? You said you're getting your master's. So you just started last year?
Yeah. So I'll be done. I mean, that's an interesting story in itself, but I'll be done August 2021. I'm going straight through.
Oh.
Like I'll have independent study in January, spring, summer next year, and then I'll be done in August. And I was actually looking at this. I didn't officially get accepted into my grad program until August 27th of 2019. The semester started like 2 days later. And it's just interesting because I truly had no intentions of going back to school, but then I heard about a really interesting program. I met with the dean of the school and he bought into Sir Amazing. He understood everything that I was trying to do, everything I wanted to accomplish and what I was working on. He was like, "We want you to be a part of this program." Went through everything that needed to be done. And then, yeah, I got it.
And that was in person at first, right?
Yeah. So that's the summer 2019. When we still could be, you know, normal humans like the past, where we get to shake hands and not wear masks, we could breathe easier.
Right. Yeah, but that was trying to think. Well, actually, that's not really true. I think my son was already home from college at that point. No, you were able to go in person in August?
August 2019?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we met in July of 2019.
You and I?
No, I'm saying
you're talking about at the school. The school, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I think here we were already shut down in New Jersey by then. Because it was an outbreak here in New York, Connecticut, maybe it wasn't so bad down by you guys already yet. Right. So you guys weren't shut down yet, but we were already shut down at that point.
You're talking about 2019 or 2020?
I'm talking about 20. What month it is? No, I guess you're right. It was last May, right? No, March of 2020 is when we shut down. Yeah. I'm a year.
Yep. Off.
Yeah. See, I'm losing my mind. So that's, yeah. And then you hit the fall and then by the next year you were virtual. See, that maybe it affects your mind too, coronavirus. I don't know.
It's all there. It's all there. So.
All right. Well, this is cool. So what do you, so you're going to finish your master's, right? You wrote the book. What's the message of the book? It's for empowering like young youth, younger men.
That's the title. I mean, everyone needs a hero. Why can't it be you? It is for everyone. I'm very vulnerable. I released some information that a lot of people never knew in the book. But it's ultimately a blueprint that anybody can utilize to start to craft, to be amazing in their own way.
Right.
And that's really the whole message.
All right, cool. Well, the book's available like on Amazon and stuff. They can get it.
Yes, sir.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.